There is a war raging in the spiritual world, forces of light against dark entities. In a moment, Stuart Wild joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Author and lecturer Stuart Wild, he's an urban mystic, a modern visionary. He has written a number of books on consciousness and awareness, including the very successful Taos Quintet, which are considered classics in their genre. Stuart's perspective has won him a loyal readership over the years, and, of course, here on Coast to Coast AM. Stuart, my friend, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, George. How are you?
There's lots to talk with you about. The battle going on in the spirit world, huh?
Yeah, there's a whole fight going down at the moment.
Stuart, I still am getting reports from people on predictions, and people are still predicting a major earthquake along the northwestern coast of the United States. Seattle area in there. And I remember a couple of years ago you talked about the possibilities too. Is that still a possibility?
Well, George, I saw that vision like a few years ago for whatever it was, like November the 4th of that year. And I was dead wrong, you know. And I haven't really made a lot of mistakes over the years. And I was sort of like shocked by the fact I'd got it wrong. But of course, I didn't see the vision. It didn't say November the 4th. That particular year, it just said November the 4th, so I suppose it could be November the 4th any year.
Exactly.
But I haven't seen any new visions for the Seattle earthquake at all, not recently. So
so maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen any, you know, none at all. So maybe that's just one of those things that's come and gone and it didn't happen, you know?
Well, when you say you're wrong, you've also been right a lot, Stuart, as well.
Yeah. I wrote a book in the 1990s called Whispering Winds of Change, which is still available. And it predicted this whole crisis that we're going through, the financial markets and so on. I mean, it predicted it right down to the line, so it was pretty accurate.
I'm just wondering that, you know, when I'm not sure you can even say you were wrong in the original prediction, that you might have been wrong on the time, the date, but, you know, it could be just something for people to be aware of.
Well, the thing about it is all my information, George, everything I write in my books and everything I write on my websites and so on, I see it all in visions, and of course it is possible for visions to be corrupted or wrong, or also you can misinterpret a vision. Do you follow me? You can get it
absolutely
backwards, you know. So, I mean, there is a margin of error, you know, where it's not a perfect science here.
You touch in this latest work here, Grace Gaia in the End of Days, a number of things, including, of course, reincarnation, battles going on in the spiritual realm, poisonous people, which I want to get into as well. But overall, tell me about the concept of this one.
Well, there's a mirror world to ours, George, and through, like, many, many decades of like going into trance every single day without fail, I began to see these hell worlds and the celestial worlds. And it has a topography, it has a geography, the beings in there. You kind of learn to maneuver your way around. And I also found that, like, if I put my arms out in front of my body, I could actually put my hand into that dimension, like from about the elbow downwards, and I could watch my arms in there. It's really strange, but that sort of mirror world isn't very far from us. It's like, I don't know, I suppose psychics call it the spirit world, mm-hmm. but you can actually see it. And then I start to see horrendous ghouls and demonic beings, and black entities, and all manner of stuff. And so I started to write about what I saw. And then how it all turned around for me was that one day I had my arms out, and I saw that I had these cactus needles on my fingers. And I said, what do I do with that? And I just heard point. And so I pointed at this entity that I could see in the distance, and somehow the cactus needle went from my finger and killed it. It just melted, degraded.
Jeez.
And after that, I spent 2 or 3 hours a day, every single day, in those lunar worlds, rubbing out these entities, you know, and I've, like, killed 84,000 so far.
84,000?
Yeah, well, I counted as far as 74,000, then I got bored of counting. But I'm not.
They just keep coming, though, don't they?
Yeah, there's endless amounts. It's probably trillions, you know, so 84,000 is probably not even 1% of 1%.
You see a lot of things in the future in forms of symbols, don't you?
Yes, it's in pictures and symbols. Sometimes I see videos, you know, like I see a video clip play in my mind's eye. And it could be a very short clip, 7 to 10 seconds, or like sometimes a clip might last 4 hours and it just plays over and over and over for 4 hours.
Do they just come randomly to you?
Randomly. They're usually in color, and then sometimes they're in night vision green, you know, like those night
goggles, absolutely.
Sure,
yeah.
So So sometimes I see it in night vision green. Sometimes I see it in sort of faint light on a dark background. And other times I see it in full frontal, full color, so to speak.
How do you interpret what you're seeing?
There's a language that you begin to learn of the symbols. You know, by seeing symbols lots and lots of times, you begin to kind of understand what they mean because you've seen them, let's say, 60, 80, 100 times before.
Stuart, let's pick up by talking about reincarnation, which you highlight in your latest work, Grace Gaia and the End of Days.
Yeah.
You claim that it's everywhere. What do you mean?
Well, that's what I was told, because we live in a holographic universe. And so each one of us is inside everything. And so when I asked about reincarnation in those inner worlds, I was just shown, excuse me, George, that it's everywhere. It's like we're inside everybody and they're inside us. We're essentially one being, you know. The whole of our humanity is joined. And Fritjof Capra said the same thing in the Tao of Physics in 1975. And a lot of people have talked about this quantum mysticism. You know, Deepak Chopra, who I know very well, he talks about it, you know, the unity in all things. And then there were some beings in there, and they were teaching me, and they said that we have five incarnations, usually.
And what do you mean by five?
Just five lives. Five
just,
lives.
That's it. Okay, that's some it, some people lives. Have said we have hundreds, but you believe just five.
No, I was told we just have five, you know.
I was wondering.
I mean, life's tough, George. I don't want to do this five times anyway, do you?
I want to get to the best part real quickly, you know, don't you? You know, you don't want to go through all these different scales of living. You just want to hit it off fast and be godlike right away, if you can. I'm not sure we all can, though.
Well, in addition to the hell worlds, which are absolutely disgusting, you know, we see the celestial worlds as well, and they're extraordinarily beautiful. They're sort of magical forests and rainbow colors and angelic beings, you know, so we see both things. We don't just see the hells.
Do we all start off on the bottom of the food chain, basically, Stuart? I mean, are there some people who are always more advanced than others? Or do we all start off, you know, pretty darn low, and then we work our way up?
Yeah, I think humanity is pretty darn low. I think we all have a deep, dark shadow that we have to process. And we all have, like, information that we were given that wasn't correct. I mean, the people may have loved us and done the best that they could and taught us what they knew, but most people really don't know much about the reality that they live in, and they're just very much just involved in survival, paying the rent and, you know, making the mortgage or whatever.
Sure thing. Lots of people don't believe in reincarnation because they claim it conflicts with their own personal beliefs. What do you tell people like that?
I think it's not necessary to believe in it. You know, I mean, it's a sort of an option. I don't have any dogma to sell anybody. I mean, it would seem strange, though, to think that you could understand the whole of life in one little lifetime. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Especially if that lifetime you're born, I don't know what, you're working in a paddy field in China, and that's it, and then you never came back. You'd hope that you'd want to come back and do something different. I don't know, be a motor racing driver, be a mother, you know, I don't know, be a farmer in Scotland or whatever it might be. Do you follow me? You'd think that you'd need more than one experience to get this, because even if you're very high-powered, you still can't get it all. I mean, there's so much to learn on the Earth plane.
In these five levels, how do we know that we haven't attained that fifth level on this go-round, or maybe we're only in our second or third?
I don't know whether it's necessarily incremental, George, where, like, you start off as a complete idiot and you wind up as being some sort of, like, you know, you go from being an idiot to being an avatar or something. I think it's
what's happening to me, Stuart? I'm going the wrong way.
No. I think it's all to do with feelings, you know. It's like you incarnate out once you've processed your feelings, once you've gone beyond, you know, evil and disdain and jealousy and aggravation and anger. And when you become an equitable, balanced person, then maybe there's no more reason for you to be here, do you see? So I don't know whether it's really the accumulation of knowledge. I think you can incarnate out without vast amounts of knowledge, but if you were very kind-hearted and very sweet and so forth, you would be allowed to leave. Because I reckon that the Earth is punishment. You know, I mean, it's a beautiful place, but for most humans, it's like painful. You know, it's punishment.
I want to stay here as long as I can before I check out. Don't you?
Well, I mean, you know, it's an interesting life. There's so much to learn. I mean, look at your job. You get every day to speak to really interesting people, and I mean, you must. It's fascinating to learn new things. You know,
it is every day. It's been, as I would say, it's been great to come in. So I'm looking at the title of your book when I got it, Grace, and I said, "Yeah, that's neat, Gaia. I like that." And then I see The End of Days, and I went, "Whoa, what's going on?" So let's dissect this for a moment, Stuart.
Okay.
What do you mean by grace?
Well, you know, the standard sort of Christian understanding of grace is like the benevolence of God, you know, so it was grace that saved a wretch like me, as the song says. But in the Aluna worlds that we watch through trance, we can see grace is this vast body of information. It's data-driven. It's laden with information. And we believe that a lot of the information that we see in the morph is grace, but grace has information in it. It has like digital fractal codes that we understand more and more, albeit we're just at a rudimentary stage of knowledge, but we've been looking inside those worlds, myself and my friends, for about 8 years, and there's much of it that we understand. I mean, grace can heal anything. Grace can give you information that no other scientist has ever thought of. Grace can compose music. You can hear operas, and, you know, it's all there. And so we look at grace more technologically as providing evolution, information, inspiration to people.
To be in that state, state of grace, let's say, do you have to be a good person?
I think so, George. You know, at least you have to, you know, have a sort of live and let live attitude for humanity, you know?
Yeah, I think so,
too. And not be too critical and not to be judgmental and not to be too fast to judge. And you have to allow humanity their weaknesses, and you have to allow people to rip you off and hurt you and still love them all.
Not easy, though, allowing that, Stuart.
No, not easy, but I think you have to be able to do that, because otherwise there's always some bitterness inside of you, and the bitterness will take your soul into these hell worlds.
I mean, I was watching this story today unfold of it happened in Canada, where a young man was sitting on a bus next to the wrong person, and this person takes out a knife and cuts his head off, Stuart.
Jesus.
You remember that case? I don't know if you remember it. It happened in Canada.
Well,
okay, well, today the judge ruled the guy's insane, so he's not going to stand trial for murder. He's insane. Well, I think you have to be insane to do that, first of all, but
yeah.
I still think the guy's criminal. But his family, the family of the victim, they're upset because they think that, you know, their loved one was murdered. This person should be punished for it. If you're in a state of grace, aren't you supposed to forgive that individual who did that to the person you cared about? I don't think I can.
No, I'm not saying that people can't necessarily forgive something like that, but we're supposed to, yeah.
What's the Gaia part of the book mean?
Well, Gaia is this idea that the planet has an intelligence. It knows how to correct itself.
It's alive.
It's alive. It's a sentient being rather than just being a rock in space. And we believe Gaia to be sacred, so we see Gaia as a goddess. We see her as a sentient being overlooking the animal kingdoms, the vegetable kingdoms, the pollution, the humans, the forest, and so forth. You know, so we would say, like, it's Mother Earth, but it's kind of a fancy name for Mother Earth.
Well, I believe in that theory. I think if there's anything that can live on planet Earth, like plants and trees and people, the planet itself has got to be alive. I've always believed, Stuart, that it fights. It heals itself. It corrects itself. It does whatever it has to do to survive. What do you think?
That is correct. You know, I mean, there's a lot of evidence for that, that the planet is self-correcting. I mean, biologically, it's self-correcting, you know.
And then you have End of Days.
The End of Days.
Oh, my God. So, I mean, is this like biblical End of Days, Armageddon? It's all over for us?
No, I believe that this is just the end of the world as we know it, George, you know. The sort of mass consumerism. But I think I don't believe the world's going to end tomorrow. You know, it's the end of days as we know it, that the extremes of consumerism and waste and lack of cooperation and isolation and loneliness, you know, those things will pass, and that the world will become more community-oriented.
So you believe we're going through a period of adjustment?
Yeah, exactly that, to come out, you know, better in the end. Because it's like, it's a fact of the ego and the desire for materialism and the desire for importance that has isolated people. So they all live in little boxes in Manhattan, let's say. But because of the crisis and because of these changes that are going on in the globe, they're going to have to come out of their ivory tower and join humanity and work with other people in order to survive. But I don't see it necessarily as a sort of pole shift or cataclysmic event that will rub out the whole world.
So you don't see an asteroid blopping down on us or anything like
that?
Well,
we have seen those visions of asteroids coming in and so forth. But again, it might be very well, you know, in the same category as my prediction of the earthquake in Seattle in November, 2 or 3 years ago.
True. You speak of worlds called a luna and yes. morph. What are they?
Well, these inner worlds that we see them as a mirror world. So, like, my right arm is my left arm in there when I see myself in there.
Okay.
It's facing us like in a mirror.
Are we all in there?
Yeah, we're all in there. And that, you see, one of the things that really fascinated me was when a person dies, what remembers them after they're dead if the brain is gone, you know, because that's the function or that's the mechanism of remembering. And so what I realized was that we're all in this mirror world. We have like a doppelganger, a second person, you know. And that person there has all of our memories, all of our feelings, and it does all the things we do. And so when you die, you don't go to a spirit world because your doppelganger image is already in there. Your mirror self is already in there.
It just picks it up.
It picks up from where it is. So in other words, people are in hell already today. They're just alive on the earth and in hell in the lunar worlds. Or they're alive on earth and they're in celestial heavens in the lunar worlds, bliss worlds, you know, what we call bliss worlds. And so the lunar is just the word we gave it because the South American shamans call that mirror world the lunar, which means of the moon.
Do you think sometimes, Stuart, that those two worlds kind of cross with physical word?
Yeah, there's no question. The stuff blips in from the mirror world to us. And we definitely have an influence in the mirror world. And certainly, if you can put your arm in there and start knocking off ghouls, you can definitely have an influence in there.
Some people have seen their doppelgangers. Some people have looked at themselves. Is that crossover?
Yes, sir. That's definitely it. There's no question of it in my mind. Yeah.
That's kind of scary. Yeah.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I've seen myself in the mirror world hundreds of times, hundreds upon hundreds of times. Sometimes I'm acting. Sometimes I'm fighting. Sometimes I just see myself looking at me. It's looking at me, and I'm looking at it.
But you're trained. That's not happening by accident, is it?
No, I mean, I've been doing this trance states thing for 20 years. I have a tape series out somewhere, probably on Amazon or with Hay House or something, called Trance States. And it just has all these various metronomes, and it talks about how to generate a brain speed of 4 to 6, 4 to 7 cycles a second and stay awake. I mean, we all go into trance every night. We go into these very low brain speeds when we sleep. But the trick is to go into that 4 to 7 cycles a second. They call it the theta brainwave. I'm sure you might have heard of that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, to go into the theta brainwave state and stay awake. And so once you can do that, then gradually the visions will start to come, and then gradually you'll actually see into these mirror worlds.
Are we being tested for something, Stuart?
I mean, I think the whole of life, the whole of our life is a test, you know. It's a test to become heroic within ourselves. It's a test to surmount problems. It's the test to give when you haven't got much to give. It's the test to forgive, you know, if somebody kills you on the bus or whatever. So I think in a way we are being tested, but I don't think there's a sort of wagging finger God up there that's testing us, that wants us to have a hard time.
Yet what about creation? How do you think this all started?
Well, I'm not a great believer in the sort of biblical version of creation because it doesn't go back far enough, you know? Intelligent design sounds good.
Yeah.
I believe that, like, the beings, the humanity, walked in from those lunar worlds. That, like, humanity, physical humans existed in these other dimensions, and they just walked out of those dimensions into the Earth plane.
Well, who thought it out? Somebody had to put it together.
A human might be very, very much older than the universe. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
The idea is we could have pre-existed this universe 13 billion years ago. I mean, what if a human evolved ever so gradually over a trillion, billion, billion, billion years? Do you follow me?
But you do believe in intelligent design.
Well, essentially, I believe that humans walked into this world in small groups and began to propagate, and that's what became humanity that we know today.
Interesting. How did you get to this belief, this system? And how long have you been thinking this way?
Well, just by watching the lunar, really, and watching the visions. You know, I saw a very beautiful vision once. It was so moving. I saw this very simple man. He wasn't Neanderthal, but he had a kind of quite hairy body, you know? And he was lying naked on these leaves in a forest. And he suddenly woke up, and you could see that he's only just got here on the Earth plane. And he woke up and was stumbling around. He didn't know where he was, but there was this feeling that, like, somehow he'd been placed there, you know?
Stuart, we're going to come back and talk about the worlds of some of these magical animals you have seen on Coast to Coast AM. Now, we're basically talking about the other dimensions through the eyes of Stuart Wild, so we'll be back with Stuart in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Are you a member of Streamlink? Well, you can for just pennies a day. Go to the coasttocoastam.com website, and you can sign up, and you get downloads and podcasts and all those other great things. And also, at the same time, You can also sign up for the free Coast Zone newsletter. You just fill out a little online application, and you get an email newsletter every morning. Stuart, do you have to get into a certain realm in order to look through these other dimensions, to look into these other worlds? Do you have to do any meditation or anything like that?
Yeah, definitely, George. Yeah, you have to be able to do this trance meditation, because without it, you can't see it. You know, if your brain is very fast and you're awake, you can't see those worlds. It closes you off, you know.
Did you teach yourself?
Yes, I did in the early days. I got a theta metronome, which is like just a little thing that goes beep, 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 beep,
for
a second, you know. And I trained myself using that. And then eventually I got rid of the theta metronome. And just so I could do it like easy, you know, I can get in 11 seconds.
That's it?
That's it. That's how long it takes me. But, you know, it's like from years of doing it, you know how to do it. You know, you just relax and you're there. And I just start to see the lunar world, you know?
Interesting that it takes 11 seconds, because we see that number everywhere, Stuart.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
it takes me 11 seconds to get in. I wanted to say, George, for the benefit of the listeners that were talking, you know, we were talking earlier on about the hell worlds, that I put a hell world article and an audio MP3 on my blog site, which is stuartwildblog.com.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who wants to go listen to the interview that I was doing or read the article, they can go there later and take a look, you know.
All right, great.
Thanks, George.
Magical animals.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about this.
Well, along with the sort of demonic realms, which I know really well, we see the celestial worlds. And one of the celestial worlds we see is what we call the magical world. And that's the world of, like, the white tiger or the black panther. And they are... they're protectors. I mean, they come around. You actually see them. I actually saw this tiger in my hotel room once. I mean, it was like a lunar world tiger, but it was sitting in the doorway between the sitting room, you know, the front room of the hotel suite and my bedroom.
Not ready to pounce on you, I trust.
No, totally docile, just sitting there. But, I mean, to have that around was amazing. So there's a sort of pantheon, a hierarchy of these animals, and there's the white tigers near the top, the jaguars, the panther, the kudu, which is an African deer with curly horns, you know, twisted horns,
mm-hmm.
the stag, the white rhino, the white buffalo, of course, which is very linked to the North American tradition, and then the horses of Revelations, we see them, the deer, the stag, and we see them all the time, you know, and they're symbolic of one's own softness, but they also come around to sort of protect you from the ghouls and from demonic attack and that sort of stuff.
I was going to say, what's the significance of them, of their existence?
Well, I mean, they're real beings, George. You know, they're sentient beings. I mean, they're not sort of stupid animals. They really are sentient beings. They're like, the Sacred Heart was very much a symbol of Camelot. You know, this was a sort of, this white stag that... That you know was sort of symbolic of the castle of Camelot, and it's heart, H-A-R-T, rather than H-E-A-R-T. So they're sentient spiritual beings. And also the other thing that we see are the manimals. And manimal is the word that I gave to being half human, half animal. Now in mythology there was the centaurs and the so forth. You know, they were half and half. You know, and we see them all the time. Beings that are half fawn, like a half a deer and half a human.
Yeah,
and they actually live in a dimension that we can see. We could actually see them in there.
You know, you did bring up the hell world.
Yes.
I've got to ask you what you see there.
Well, you essentially see the demonic entities, and they are like, they're digital fractal entities in so much as they're made up of little cubes, but they have human faces. And they're really, really disgustingly ugly. They're dirty. And they spit and they fire pulses of evil. A pain in the human body.
What's that beep I keep hearing?
No, I didn't hear that.
Oh.
Yeah.
I bet you're rubbing it against your ear, your phone, huh?
No, I didn't. I didn't rub
really?
It to it. Sorry.
Okay.
My ear doesn't beep.
Okay. We're
no, I've just beeps. Got the phone near to my ear, but I haven't got anything on. Like, I don't have anything like an earring or anything, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. The beings are like half human, half animal, but they're real sentient beings. I mean, they're sort of spiritual teachers, guides, protectors, and they evolve in these magical worlds, you know, so it's really, really strange to watch. I mean, magical, really, beyond inspiring. It's awe-inspiring.
So you don't see, for example, in the hell world, the so-called devil or Satan?
There's not any one person in there that is like Satan. You see these fractal beings that are sort of made up of boxes. They have human faces, but they're extraordinarily ugly. And often they'll have accoutrements or appendages, crowns and scepters and swords and whatever. They don't move very fast, but they spit. They fire a pulse at you that can create pain in your muscular body or in your body. Then there's all sorts of like reptilian beings that are in the very, very low dark hells. The further you go down into the hell worlds, because they're layered, that they go down and down, dimension upon dimension upon dimension. And in the very lowest worlds are the reptilians. So a lot of them look like crocodiles. They're beings that are like anacondas, but they're miles and miles long. And then there's very leathery beings in there that are very reptilian and very ugly. And then there's... I could hear that click again. I heard that click that time.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. It must be something electronic because it's not my end.
Are you on a battery?
No, I'm just on a power line.
Okay. All right.
I just asked. I've got an engineer here. I can ask him. No, we're plugged into the wall.
Okay.
There's a blip on the line. Can you check it for me, Brad? Okay. They're just being involved inside this strange world, you know?
It happened again, Stuart. If it keeps up, we're going to have to figure out something else to do, okay?
Okay, I just didn't hear it that time.
It's going like every 25 seconds now.
It is? How weird is that?
That's really strange.
Have you had a lot of trouble with electronic equipment and stuff, George, recently, like emails that disappear and the computers that crash suddenly and so on?
Slow computers, Stuart. Very slow lately.
Slowly.
But, you know, nothing crashing, nothing disappearing.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's really weird.
Just slow. How many of these other worlds are out there? I mean, we've heard of, you know, parallel universes, and now physicists are beginning to say, you know, there could be hundreds of universes, maybe thousands, who knows, bubbles attached. How many worlds do you see of these parallel universes?
Well, I mean, endless. I mean, they probably go into trillions, but, I mean, we've been through, I mean, many hundreds, you know? I mean, for example, we've seen, like, you know, people believe that UFOs are, like, from outer space and so forth, but we see them in the lunar worlds, and we see them being birthed. And they come out of a little tube that comes up from below you, and they come out of the tube 11 at a time. So they're like drones that are being birthed out of this tube that is like a birth canal. We can't see what the tube's connected to, but we can actually watch the UFOs inside these other worlds. And so I sit at the end of the tube, and I whack them as they come out.
What do you mean, whack them?
Well, like rub them out before they get going. You know, these are like baby UFOs that are just being born, you know?
But they could be good.
Well, you know, the sort of the alien abduction and the sort of spooky nature of the grays has given us a lot to believe that they're not good, George, you know?
Well, there's many people have said that too.
Yeah.
That they come from sources that we don't really want to get involved with.
Well, certainly Jacques Vallée, you know, the sort of legendary UFO researcher, you know, that they made Close Encounters, the film, about.
Calls them messengers of deception.
Yeah, messengers of deception, you know. So, I mean, we look at them as like the devil's air force.
Yet through all of this, you still see the grace part of this. You still see the good part of this.
Yeah, that's what I write about in my book, George, you know, Gray Sky and the End of Days. I see redemption for us because we have to go through our dark shadow. You know, America has to go through its shadow. So does England, so does Europe, so does Japan, so does Africa. We all have to go through our own evil and then come out the other side and see ourselves as something different or special or I don't know what, you know. We've got to transcend. You know, the evil doesn't go anywhere. It's always there until we own it, feel sorry for it, reconcile it, and so forth, you know?
But, I'm beginning to believe, though, that everything in this universe and everything in these dimensions is based on positive and negative, good and bad. There always seems to be this balance, Stuart, and I'm not sure we can all be good without having all this bad.
Yeah, no, you have to. You've got to go through the evil in order to arrive at the good, you know?
Well, that's true. But how do we know evil will lose?
We don't. We just got to presume it does in the end, you know? Like, that's all we can do is just hope that it'll end.
What do you mean by poisonous people, by the way? This is the first time I've heard of this.
One of the things that we watch is that, let's say, for example, when people are sitting on a bus, we see pods leaving from one person and going down the crown chakra of another person. And so they're sort of being, infested, you know?
Yeah.
And so some people are there are actually sort of emitting evil, and they're sort of infesting the people around them. And then we see tubes that go from one human to another. They loop across like the tentacles of an octopus. And if they find congruence with the person sitting next to them on the chart, you know, on the bus, then, you know, that information will go into that human and they'll be degraded or depressed or upset in some way, you know?
Are these poisonous people what you would call negative type people?
Yeah, or people that just admit evil, you know, that have a great unprocessed shadow, you know, that like have an evil.
You know, I'm having a difficult time trying to understand the nature of these people. How do they exist?
Well, they're just ordinary humans, George. You know, people can be like enormously ugly and enormously evil and hide that evil. You know, you don't know what they get up to in the privacy of their own homes, or you don't know what level of disdain and ugliness and hatred and jealousy they have inside of them.
True.
So it's not just people that are overtly normally evil. Let's say, I don't know, a very violent gang member or something.
Which are obvious.
Yeah, which are obviously evil, yeah.
So yeah. The other ones are quietly evil.
Well, they're silently evil. You know, they're just silently evil. You know, it's deep inside of them. Their hatred for humanity and so on, you know.
But you see all this changing. You see a light at the end of the tunnel, don't you?
I see a light at the end of the tunnel because I believe in the end our humanity's destiny is to redeem themselves, you know. I wrote a book, George, called The Art of Redemption, which is quite well received, and it went through this sort of shadow process of how you begin to look at your shadow. And what I said was the first thing is the investigation. And the investigation is where you sort of arrest yourself and investigate your crimes. Hey, was I mean to my mother? Was I rotten to these people? Did I rip them off? Was I unkind? Did I have, like, silent disdain for humanity? You know, and then you go through the guilt or the agony of realizing that you've hurt humans, and eventually you come out the other side as this reconciled being that's redeemed and made whole.
Will we always come out whole, though, Stuart? Will we always come out
the victor? I think some people are like perpetually evil. You know, they don't want to change, you know. So I suppose they just die and go to the hell world and become the ghouls that we fight in 10,000 years from now. But I think that people do desire to be made whole, don't they? The desire to
Most
be
of
redeemed,
them.
Don't they? Many people do. And people desire to be absolved. I mean, everybody wants to be absolved, to be brought home, to be brought back. It's not necessarily a religious concept. It's more like the idea that we can be carried back to some place that's pure and pristine and where we see everything in a glorious light.
Most people, I believe, are good, don't you?
They have a goodness and they have an evil. They have both, you know? So I think that, yes, that's true. And then I think most people have an evil inside of themselves, you know? They may be balanced day to day, but if anything goes wrong, they can become really scary. Do you follow me? You know,
they keep it in check, I guess.
They keep it in check until they don't. And then they start getting vindictive or they get dishonest or whatever, you know?
Everybody?
Well, I'm not saying everybody, but many, you know, many, many people.
Many.
You know, yeah, many, many people, you know, because quite often the Mr. Nice Guy persona hides a person that's a sexist, he's a racist, he's a control freak, he's like, there's lots of things wrong with Mr. Nice Guy, but he's very socially okay, you know? Like he fries the weenie, he fries the sausages or the hamburger, you know, do and stuff like that, but deep down he may have a resentment for humanity, a hatred for women, you don't know, you know?
What can that person do to change? What can they
do? Well, they have to go through the process. There's no way to avoid the process. They, first of all, have to go through the introspection. They have to go through the investigation. They have to look deep down about, like, how do I actually treat humanity? How do I feel about this tribe of people, that religion? How do I feel about women? How do I feel about men? Am I anti-gays? Am I anti-this? Am I anti-that? How do I actually feel? And then they have to investigate whether they have a repressed anger inside of themselves, whether they have a jealousy, you know, let's say if they're economically deprived, are they jealous of rich people? You know, do they act to support humans? Do they act to love humans? Or do they act to bring other people down? Or are they jealous of other people and so forth, you know?
Or are rich people jealous of other people?
Or are just rich people jealous of other people? Or whatever it might be. But you have to go through that investigation inside yourself. And that comes through humility, through prayer, through meditation, through serenity, through getting in touch with your feelings. Like, who am I? and how am I doing, and what is truth? What is truth? Did I rip my mother off or didn't? Am I cruel to her or am I not? You know, am I kind to people? Do I have a soft eye for everybody I pass in the street and a kind word? Or do I look at them with disdain, or do I feel their competition, or, you know, all that stuff, George?
Do you think that some people can change within themselves? You know, a lot of folks who have problems, Stuart, will go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Should they be able to fix this themselves?
Sometimes they can't, George, because sometimes the problems are so immense and so extraordinarily complicated for them to understand, and also would depend on their level of education and understanding of their awareness and so forth. So I think that in essence, a lot of people need something. They need a book, they need a psychologist, they need someone. And then sometimes a lot of it you can do yourself, because you just look and see what it is that that you really truly feel about humanity. I mean, you're supposed to adore everybody, even the people that are really ugly, and that's the hard part. If somebody's really ugly, you're still supposed to love them.
What do we do to keep out of the hell world?
Well, you have to change your feelings. You know, you have to change your feelings, and you have to get real. You know, a lot of people think that spirituality is like, I don't know, robes and clanking little bells and putting on a show. But I say in my books that spirituality is very much a matter of like becoming ever more normal, where you're natural, you're not posing, you're not pretending, you're not telling lies, you're not making a great show, there's not no great amount of bling-bling, you're not showing off, you're not seeking attention, you're not grabbing the limelight, you're not pushing ahead of others. You step back and let humanity go first, and you go last.
You know, I keep thinking, here's an example of Libya's leader, Muammar Gaddafi.
Muammar, yeah.
Years ago, you know, we see this guy as a terrorist, and then we bomb him during the Reagan administration. A couple members of his family die tragically.
Yes.
Yet he seems to still keep doing what he was doing, a little quieter. And then later on, he seems to become Mr. Nice Guy. He, you know, gets rid of his nuclear program. He goes public. He, you know, apologizes for a bombing of a plane.
Yeah.
Can you trust someone that this person has gotten rid of evil? How do you really know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose if you sat opposite him, you can tell, because one thing is this, that the sight of these lunar worlds gives you acute perception. You could read people's soul. I wouldn't know without actually sitting in front of Mr. Muammar Gaddafi whether or not he was intensely evil or whether he's a reformed character.
Yeah.
But he's certainly, from an American point of view, behaving better, so I think we can rejoice in sort of his slight redemption, let's say.
Well, the trouble is, would you go to sleep with knowing he was wandering around the room with a knife? I'm not sure.
No, I don't know that I would, you know. I don't know that I would. But certainly, you know, he certainly seems to be improving. But whether or not it's all for show or for economic reasons, or maybe he's scared. Maybe he's scared the American military is going to come again or whatever, you know.
The reincarnation portion of all of this, like in your particular case, do you think you're at this is it for you? You've evolved and you're not coming back anymore.
I don't think I'm leaving because of any sort of great achievement or self-importance, George. But I would hope that I understand enough about the Luna and my feelings and the feelings of humanity and so on to go on to something else. Do you follow me?
Grace, Gaia, and the End of Days. Where do you get this?
Well, it goes back to grace as a technology. It's not just a sort of golden light from heaven that may save a wretch like me, you know. It is actually a technology that people can go study. I mean, you could almost have a university of grace. And we know hundreds, thousands of people that study it by going into trance. Sometimes they go and they can see some of these worlds on ayahuasca that you and I have talked about before, mm-hmm. you know, George. So we go down to South America, Ecuador, where I run ayahuasca tours down there, and it's legal. And you can see those are lunar worlds with ayahuasca as well, you know. You can see it. And so it's like it's an understanding, it's a technology, and now our information is vast compared to where it was, let's say, 8 or 9 years ago, you know?
Stuart's blog, Stuart Wilde, WILDE blog.com. I'm George Norrie, and I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.